ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia's always been the lucky country. Sunshine, beaches, and that one magpie that always seems to know where you live.
Yeah, get away from my chip, please. Luck might not cut it anymore.
So can we make our own luck and turn this complicated world to our advantage?
That's our global roaming summer season. Can Australia surf the world's chaos without wiping out?
Fresh new episodes all summer. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Damien Carrick with you here on ABC Radio National Summer. This is the Law Report, leading the national conversation of legal stories and cases.
The story in this painting is about knowledge passed down and the creation of country and how it resembles to our lives and every day in the practices we do.
Can art change lives? Last June, Melbourne hosted an exhibition of First Nations artists who picked up the paintbrush while they were in prison. Confined 16 was the 16th exhibition hosted by an extraordinary organisation called The Torch. I'm joined by a number of people who are involved with the group. Susanna Day, Matu Dalo woman originally from WA, she's the CEO of The Torch. Ash Thomas is a Yorta Yorta Wiradjuri man, an artist who works part-time as an art support assistant with The Torch. Daniel Led, a Wiradjuri Nyampa man, he's an artist and an Indigenous arts officer with The Torch. And also Palawa woman and artist Thelma Beaton. Susanna Day, you're the CEO of The Torch. What exactly is it?
The Torch is an extraordinary organisation. We're based in Carlton on Wurundjeri land, and we started in 2011 trying to look at the problem of the hyper-incarceration of First Nations people in this country, and particularly in the state of Victoria. We work with just under 900 artists every year across the 15 Victorian prisons, and we support them to connect and reconnect to their arts and to their culture and try and find a different pathway away from the criminal legal system.
So you go into the prisons and you make art with prisoners.
Yeah, essentially. And it's not just about creating an arts practice, but it's about connecting to culture. So many of our artists, much like myself as the granddaughter of a Stolen Generation survivor, we've been brought up without our culture, or there's a real loss of identity, and there's a hole and we need to fill it. And sometimes that might be the reason they're in prison in the first place. So we're trying to fill that gap and trying to give cultural research and support, and actually importantly dignity, to a space that's pretty dehumanising. So if we can add humanity into the mix of prison, we know that we're building and creating better humans when they get out.
Okay, so I think that Indigenous Australians make up about 4% of the population, but 36% of the prison population. That's the latest stat, isn't
That's
it?
That's correct.
How effective is The Torch in breaking that cycle?
Really effective. Last year, we gave back $1.1 million of artwork sales and licensing to just under 900 artists. I think that wealth transfer and that economic prosperity that can be gained is that dignity piece. Importantly, our artists are reincarcerated at a much lower rate than the national average. The national average at the moment is about between 55 and 65% for First Nations people. For artists that have been involved in the Torch program for more than a year, we're really proud to say it's just under 20%.
Confined 16 is because it's the 16th year of the group in which the group has been exhibiting. Thelma Beaton, you're a professional artist. Now, your art focuses on the Tasmanian emu, which is a totem of the Palawa people on Tasmania. But as a young person, you got into trouble with the law for a different kind of art. You were doing a lot of graffiti tagging. Where were you at in your life and what were you up to?
I think back then I had a lot of mental health issues, and I didn't know how to cope with things. I was going through like domestic violence and things like that. So, and living homeless, and graffiti was my escape. And, you know, I had struggles with drug addiction, and also living homeless on the streets wasn't good either. And so I was locked up for things like assaults on police, even though I was assaulted, you know, and I went into prison and done time for that. And then when I went to court, and then it got dismissed and nothing got done about me being assaulted. So, you know, that really took a toll on my mental health. You know, it really made me not feel safe and scared. And so, you know, I'd get done with weapons on me and graffiti. And
how long did you spend in jail?
I was went in 2014, didn't get on the torch program until 2016. And, I was there for, I can't remember how many years I was there for, but I haven't been to jail now for about 6 years. So, yeah, since I got on the torch program and instantly as soon as I started doing art inside, it took away my anxiety and it gave me something positive to focus on. And it was really good to use my time painting at night time while everyone was sleeping. I would be up painting. I was just really excited to create and see what I could do and, express myself, tell my stories.
So you were going in and out of prison kind of regularly?
A million times, yeah, like in and out. Like once I got released, I was back in that night.
Damien, could I just say something about recovery and rehabilitation? We recognise at the Torch that rehabilitation and recovery, and particularly from addiction, it's not linear. People are not walking in straight lines away from drugs. People, so many of our artists still struggle with drugs and alcohol. But the thing about the Torch is it's non-punitive and it's absolutely non-judgmental. We support people and make sure that they feel that they can have a home with us and a community with us, and we support them no matter what. So people can engage and disengage with us as they like. And we know that that model really works.
And would you describe yourself now as a professional artist?
Absolutely, yeah.
I understand that your paintings now sell for around $2,000 each, is that right?
Yeah, roughly, yeah. The last one just sold for $5,000, but that was quite a large painting, so it's it varies.
You make a living?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And just for listeners to describe your work, a lot of beautiful, very kind of bright and friendly looking emus in your work.
Yeah, it's very colourful and it's kind of like childlike, but adults love my paintings as well.
Ash Thomas, I read an article about you where you said about the Torch, quote, "I didn't have much of a life before. I could never have imagined the life I have now. I would never have imagined this was possible," end quote. What was the situation that led you to prison and how did the Torch impact on you?
Before jail this time, my whole life's been on the streets, drugs, crime. That's all that I knew and all that I was about. I said before I went to jail this time, I'd lost everything. I'd lost my kids. I'd lost my relationship. I'd lost everything I was trying to check out. Yeah, going to jail was in a pretty bad place. It took a while to get my head around things, but having the art classes in jail and mob and familiar faces around me and support got through it all, and yeah, here we are today.
And your work has a lot of birds in it, doesn't it?
Oh, I do silhouettes of the birds in the sense they identify as our creator spirit, Sponge and Lemoir. They're always up there in the stars watching over us and make sure we keep on the good path and giving us strength and connection to culture and country.
You talk about connection to culture. One of the consequences of colonisation has been the disconnection of Indigenous people from their own culture. And I understand that when people start with the Torch program in prison, sometimes they say, "I don't know what to paint. I'm not connected to anything." Is that something you can relate to?
When I first picked up the paintbrushes, yes, but as you go on, you learn more about your culture, your mob, who you are, more of an identity. You start painting the things from where you're from and your country, yeah.
Birds have wings and they can kind of soar above everything. Was that an important kind of image or idea for you when you were in prison?
Oh, yes, that ultimate freedom, just soaring above the sky, above everything, not really a worry in the world.
Ash, you now work as a support assistant with the Torch. What does that involve?
I help do a lot of the work organising the exhibitions and do a lot of the stuff to do with art sales and packing stuff. I also do the cleaning at Torch as well. I've been there doing that for 2 years now. I've been involved with the Torch. This is my ninth year and this program's amazing. It's, yeah, wow.
I understand that your work is now hung in a number of courtrooms and courthouses around the state. I think the Moorabbin Courthouse in suburban Melbourne, the Coroner's Court, which is just around the corner here in South Bank in Melbourne. What does that mean for you to have your work in courthouses?
Oh, it's pretty real thing because I've been in and out of the court system for a lot of years, and it's a bit weird. You have people walking up to you in the street that recognise your art and recognise you, and they come up and greet you and treat you like you're a celebrity. It's a real privilege, yeah, to have my art out there in the Melbourne collection, the courts and stuff, yeah.
Mm. Does it make you think differently about the system?
Now I've had a chance to live on the other side of that fence and look back in on it, yeah. Change the way that I think and look at things dramatically, yeah.
To selling art also, is that part of your income now?
Selling this art means a lot to me. It helps me pay my bills, my rent. I've now also got my 17-year-old daughter who's moved home after 10 years, and just having that stability for her and being able to give her the things that she needs and wants that I can't put it into words yet.
Daniel Laird, can you tell me about the life that you led that led to going to jail and what you were in for?
I sort of had avoided getting locked up until I was in my 30s, but I had lived pretty much as a career criminal most of my 20s, as a drug dealer, yeah, running amok, which ultimately ended with me joining outlaw motorcycle clubs, which then ultimately led to me going to jail. So I did 5 years in clubs, and then that went astray and ended up in prison, which is I'm kind of thankful for, because it was, you know, there's only usually two ways. It's either dead or in jail with that lifestyle. And it was the wake-up call that I needed. You know, I had a son that, you know, needed me, and that lifestyle is not the way to go.
And how long were you in jail for?
My last sentence was 2 years, but I had a 3.5-year sentence, and I got out on parole because I just put my head down, painted, did all education, kept out of trouble, you know, stuck with the fellas that were trying to better themselves, you know, because the brothers were there for me in prison when no one else was, except for, you know, obviously my family was there for me. But, you know, the people from my past life wrote me off, you know, people that I thought were going to be there for me to the end, people that I was in prison for, just pretended I didn't exist.
So rebuilding connections with the Indigenous community and your own family.
Yeah. Well, the brothers inside showed me more love than the people that were supposed to be my brothers on the outside.
You're an artist and also an Indigenous arts officer. What's the role of an Indigenous arts officer with the torch?
So my role is I go back into the prisons as a lived experience worker, mentor, supporter, facilitator kind of role. And, you know, I help the fellas with their artwork and I collect it and I fill the forms out with them, help them with their stories for their artwork, just be, sort of a familiar face, because a lot of the fellas I've actually done time with. And, you know, I like to be like an inspiration, where it's like, you know, there is hope after prison. You know, when they see me come in the door, it's like, you know, it's good to see you coming in civilian clothes instead of in greens, and, you know, being able to show them, you know, there is hope.
Do prisons, all prisons have like art studios or art spaces? How does it work?
Yeah, most prisons have some kind of art class, and they attend that up to 2 times a week. Some have even more than that, like Ravenhall Prison will have an Aboriginal art class, and they'll have a graphic design class that's open to everyone, including, you know, our own fellas. So they get a lot more help at that prison than they would at, say, Beechworth Prison, where they're sort of left more on their own to do their own painting in their own time, in their own facilities.
Mm. I read one of the other people who went through the torch system said, being in that art room, quote, "it was a form of escapism for me. I was able to go to a place where I felt I wasn't in jail." Does that resonate with you?
Yes, 100%. Like, prison can be broken up into little cliques, kind of like high school, you know, and there's some fellas who come to jail who just want to continue to run amok and use drugs while they're in prison. And there's some fellas who just want to put their head down and learn new skills and, you know, deep dive further into their culture. you know, learn from the older fellas and, you know, try to better themselves.
And do you reckon that the torch is an opportunity to do all those kind of more positive things?
Oh, 100% it is, because, you know, like not just the cultural side of things and, you know, the connection with the other fellas that are painting, it's like the financial benefits as well. Like I know I see it firsthand when I go back in and someone sold a painting, you know, like especially when it's their first painting, you know what I mean? Like the look in their eyes, they'll be like, because not a lot of them get money sent from the outside, so they can't afford the little luxuries that you can purchase in prison. And when they sell a painting, they can do that. And I remember this one fella in particular, you know, he almost teared up because he could buy a new pair of shoes, you know. And like shoes are a status symbol in the prison system. It's like if you have to wear prison-issued shoes, it's sort of, you know, it's not a good look. But when you can buy a brand new pair from the special spends booklet, you know, you got self-pride, self-worth. You feel like you're a little bit more than, you know, someone who just can't afford things, you know.
Mm.
There's such agency and dignity in that, right? Yeah. Like for someone to be able to decide what to wear, which you don't get to do very often in prison,
yeah,
that's really, really important. And the social and emotional well-being benefits from that is immeasurable.
Yeah, 100%.
You're listening to The Law Report, coming to you from Nam, Melbourne, Wurundjeri country. Today, we're talking about The Torch, speaking with CEO Susanna Day and artists Ash Thomas, Daniel Laird and Thelma Beaton. Daniel, you've said you do this. You go back into the prisons and you went through The Torch program because, quote, you use your art to express resilience and pride. And you've said before that your journey highlights the role of family in navigating difficult times and the power of art to heal and inspire. What do you mean by that?
You can express so much in a painting and tell such a deep story. And, you know, like when you have a great story with a great piece of art, you know, it just makes it so much, you know, I feel worth so much more, you know, because it's like if you can express your emotions through your art, it's just next level.
What's your latest work? What's it focusing on?
My latest work is Flood Story. See, I don't paint with normal acrylic paints like most people. I use a rust effect paint that has iron filaments in it, and then you paint with an acid and then it develops real rust, and then you have to feed it with like salt water. So my latest story is all about a flood scene where the men have gone out hunting and have been separated from the women and children, and they have to be patient and wait for the flood waters to subside before they can get back to their family. So it's kind of like, you know, when things get overwhelming and too much on in life, you just have to, you know, ride out the storm and be patient and resilient and not panic and just let it all subside and everything will be all right.
So it's kind of about resilience, cultural resilience and
resilience and patience in life in general.
So you go into the prisons. Does the support for prison artists continue once they have left the prison?
Yep, they sure do. Like we have an amazing in-community program where we work with our artists and help them with their art supplies, their art practice, their cultural practice. You know, we try to build, you know, like a real good, healthy social network with some of our artists and take them on excursions and to, you know, art shows and galleries and things like that and workshops.
I believe that one of your participants, Stacey Edwards, who's now also works at The Torch, I think she's now a gallery assistant. I understand that she was able to buy a house when she was released from prison. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she's a very talented artist.
And Susanna, are there similar programs like The Torch all around Australia?
Unfortunately, there isn't. The Torch is really unique to Victoria. So we work just in the Victorian prison system. There are certainly other examples where prison art is being valued in other states. So there's the Boomgate Gallery in New South Wales, and there's a beautiful exhibition every year at Fremantle Prison, quite ironically, from West Australian art. But certainly The Torch and the Aboriginal art policy that we enacted in 2016 is the only program of its kind that allows people people incarcerated either on a custodial sentence or remand to draw an income from the sale of their work and actually get some of that money while they're inside. And interestingly, the money that's being held for them in a trust, so they get about 15% of the sale price whilst they're in, and then that balance is being held in a trust fund. And the interest built on that trust fund actually goes to a victims of crime fund. So the work that they're doing is actually helping in many ways, both for themselves but also for victims.
So that's a system here in Victoria?
That's the system in Victoria.
But there isn't a similar system in other parts of the country?
No, nothing that is statewide that affects every First Nations prisoner within the state. The Aboriginal Art Policy, which I said was enacted in 2016 with bipartisan support, gives, importantly, other than the economic elevation element, it gives First Nations prisoners access to free cultural resource. So they must be supplied things like art supplies and given opportunities to practice culture while they're inside. And that is based from one of the recommendations from the Victorian Ombudsman that said if we can actually give people access to cultural practice while they're in, they've got a better chance not to re-offend when they're out.
You know, I remember way back, you know, Chappelle Corby, I think, wrote a book about her life and what have you. And there were issues around, people behind bars should not be able to make money from their crimes or while they are behind bars. Do you think that kind of logic stacks up?
No, it doesn't. What we are doing is righting the wrongs of ultimately 250 years of colonisation, of disruption of culture, of families being ripped apart, the White Australia policy, systemic racism. We know that our mob are more likely to get a custodial sentence than non-Indigenous people for the same crimes. We are kind of creating a balance and redistributing wealth that absolutely is so important. So many of the First Nations people in this country, but particularly this state, there's no intergenerational wealth transfer. You know, convicts that came out in 1788 were given a plot of land after they'd finished their time as a convict. We didn't get given anything. We just got things taken away from us. And that is, it's irreparable, I would suggest. But what we are trying to do is figure out how to tilt that balance back towards us and create a prosperous nation. We want our artists, every one of our artists and every person in Victoria, First Nations person in Victoria, to feel like a cultural leader, to feel like a respected person, and to be ultimately, I think, living back on country with their kids, and to try and stop this intergenerational trauma that is incarceration and the hyper-incarceration of Aboriginal people in this country.
Before The Torch, you worked as a theatre producer, and I read that you spoke about going to a prison in Perth to watch a performance of Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, and one of the performers told you that this was the first time they had been able to wear something that wasn't a green tracksuit. So what does art, what does theatre, what does painting do? How does it transform people on the inside?
Art and cultural practice heals. It is restitching these gaping wounds that we have as Aboriginal people in this country. It allows us to tell stories that are harder to tell just kind of in dialogue with someone. And when you're not given a platform to tell your story, then there is no healing. Giving our artists, 900 artists, over 2,000 artworks a year, we're telling 2,000 unique stories, and we are trying to ask the audience and our customers to listen, and to listen to what they, our artists, feel is the solution to this really big problem, because we do have the answers. Our community has the answers, and it is an Aboriginal-led organisation like The Torch giving people access to artistic pathways and economic prosperity. Like, these are the answers. Yeah, seeing that show, Midsummer Night's Dream, it opened a door for me, and it reminded me that art needs to do something way more important than just do something pretty on a stage, or, you know, show people a pretty picture or a photograph. It must tell a really important story, and it must represent our whole entire community and our whole population. Like, who is struggling? Who's doing well? What can we change? And how can we level this balance
So Confine 16 is currently at the, I think, the Glen Ira Town Hall in suburban Melbourne, and it's also very much a celebration of the artists like Thelma, Ash and Daniel. But there's another exhibition currently taking place in Melbourne. It's called Black Injustice, Black IN-Justice. And that's at the Heidi Gallery in Melbourne, also in Melbourne's suburbs. And that's a combination of torch artists and also the country's leading First Nations artists, established First Nations artists. And that's really asking the whole community to face some pretty serious issues and questions around incarceration. And Thelma, you're one of the artists, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yep.
What do you want us to think about?
Well, I think for Stacey and I, because Stacey's in the exhibition with me, we had an exhibition a few years ago called Bunya Bunya Naunta, and Stacey was still incarcerated when we done that exhibition. And basically for this Black Injustice exhibition, we called up the people that brought the paintings and asked for the paintings back on loan and put our old exhibition into this Black Injustice exhibition, if that makes sense. And, you know, we've had deaths in custody, black deaths in custody, and you know, we just remember the girls that we've lost. And I mean, the paintings aren't about them or anything, but we certainly carry the weight of that in our hearts. And you know, it's not something that any of us like going through, you know, it's just one of them things, but something needs to be done about the deaths in custody. Yeah,
I think it's incredibly timely that we are talking about black deaths in custody, given what's happened in Alice Springs in the last week.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly difficult time to be an Aboriginal person in this country. We are over-surveilled and over-policed. And I think what this exhibition does is it asks the audience to think about where they are in that narrative, because everyone has a part to play in the death of Kumanjai White. It is an incredibly sad time. And
a disabled man who died at the Coles or the Woolworths in Alice Springs,
yeah,
a week or so ago.
Yeah. And this exhibition looks at, even though, well, he is a black death in custody, but what I would like to ask the audience is to think about what is ingrained in us. And it's coming from an early, early age. Like my education in the 90s was ignorant at best and racist at worst. This country is scared of black and brown bodies, even just sitting, like being there in the public, let alone the issue of food insecurity and the reason he was possibly shoplifting in the first place. You know, I ask people to think about when they're calling the police and what are they thinking that the police are going to do? Like, are they safety? Are the police an institution of public safety? I'd suggest no, and certainly not for Aboriginal people in this state and this country. So it's this exhibition is absolutely about the 590 plus people that have died since the Royal Commission in 1991, but it's also about the absolute stain on our country, which is the hyper-incarceration of Aboriginal people in the prison system, and not only for adults, but absolutely for our young people, who make up 60% of the youth justice system in this country. That is a shame, and it's not getting better.
Final word from Ash or Daniel. Anything you want to say?
Well, people should get behind this program and support it and believe in it, because it's really changing lives. It's amazing.
Yeah, make sure you go and check out Black Injustice. It's very moving.
Susanna Day, Ash Thomas, Daniel Laird and Thelma Beaton, I've really, really enjoyed my conversation with you today. Great talking. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
That's the Law Report for this week. Do follow the program on the ABC Listen app. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. To follow, all you need to do is click on the heart button. A big thanks to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer Angie Grant. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more Law.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.